Hello, welcome to This Week in the Atlantic Coast Conference, the podcast for allsportsdiscussion.com. This is Jeff, one of your podcast co-hosts, and you can follow me on Twitter, X, at Talkin' ACC Sports. That's at TalkinACCSports. The podcast moderator is Matthew. And you can follow him at ASD_HokeySmash.
Fantastic job! Fantastic job, Jeff! How you doing, buddy?
All right, all right.
This is Matthew here. Jeff gave the great Twitter account here. I spent a lot more time at the allsportsdiscussion.com Twitter account. That's at AllSportsDACC. Again, that's at AllSportsDACC. I spent a lot of time there. We kind of publicized the site, put out my interesting sport takes, and other things like that. So it is certainly a must-follow X account if you're looking at social media accounts that pertain to our site. The AllSportsDiscussion.com ACC podcast is the longest running independent ACC podcast in the United States. And I see it looks like Scott joined the room here, Jeff. Is that the case? I'm not sure yet.
He's here as a listener, and we just invited Scott as a speaker.
And it looks like he's live with us. Mr. Reimer, this is Matthew here. Thank you for joining us tonight. I want to make sure I introduce you before we get going here. I just want to make sure I introduce our podcast guest. I mean, it's always a treat to have Scott on. He is a fabulous return guest. He comes here every year to preview Clemson football with us. Scott Reimer is his name. You can follow him on Twitter at @TigerPregame. He joins us by way of Tiger Pregame Show.blogspot.com. He hosts the Tiger Pregame Show on WCCP 105.5 FM in the upstate of South Carolina. Scott, welcome back. Before we start, is there anything that you want to plug, my friend? The floor is yours.
Yeah, Matthew, I think we're waiting for Scott to join as a speaker. He's there as a listener, so we're just waiting for him to join where he's able to talk. I don't yet see him as a speaker. So while we wait for Scott to get on board there, right now we're in the middle of the college softball opening round. Matthew, if you can check with... Oh, there we see him now. Perfect. Scott, we've got you connected.
Wonderful. Can you guys hear me now? Okay.
Perfect. We can hear you now, man. This is what the old Sprint, commercials, right? Can you hear me now?
Well, it's an annual tradition of me joining you right before the summer or right around the summer and me not figuring out how to lock on right. So we're consistent in each and every year. Thanks for having me on again, guys. It's a pleasure to be with you and the folks that are chiming in along the interweb. Looking forward to it. You introduced me perfectly. At Tiger Pregame is Twitter. That's the easiest way to get around with me, and that certainly can get you to all the links that I do. But the Tiger Pregame Show is what I do on Clemson football Saturdays, but throughout the year it's at Tiger Pregame on Twitter. And looking forward to talking a little Clemson football and college football as we close out the spring athletic season and turn our focus to what is an ever evolving, changing college football landscape.
Definitely. So before we get to football, Scott, I want to give you a chance to talk about Clemson men's basketball, because honestly, it was a heck of a year for the Tigers. Perhaps, I would argue, unexpected to really get that far. I mean, it seems that Brad Brownell is forever on the hot seat, but I think that he is solidified himself quite far off that hot seat now after this after the season. And I mean, they were, you know, Clemson was really close to getting to a Final Four. So this is obviously a terrific year for the Tigers.
It's funny. I tell people all the time, I try not to get emotionally invested into Clemson basketball because it'll break your heart. We've had so many ups and downs throughout the years, and this team started out so well. There was a lot of optimism into the beginning of the season, of course, with the return of PJ Hall and Chase Hunter, and it looked like a team. We didn't really know who Joe Girard was at the moment, but we knew what he was at Syracuse. So you kind of felt like this was going to be a good team, and it got off to a blazing hot start, I should say. And so then they start roping you in a little bit. You know, you get emotionally invested in Clemson basketball as the football season ends and January and February rolls in. And it hit a little bit of a dead spot towards the end of the season. And then, of course, that was probably the low point of the season in the ACC tournament with the quick exit there. But Clemson quickly rebounded and made a wonderful run in the tournament. And it was a lot of fun to watch. I think Clemson lost to a better team once they got to the Elite Eight. But it was a fun run. And I think Brad Brownell shows and is showing how this new era, you know, we talk about this in football with the portal and all these things and whether or not Clemson's and Dabo Swinney's going to be a part of that moving forward. We've seen how Clemson has definitely benefited from the portal in terms of basketball, and Brad Brownell is certainly a beneficiary of that. And it was a fun run. And I think the portal pluses and minuses for Clemson for this year are in the plus. And so certainly losing PJ Hall, we don't know what's going to happen with Chase Hunter yet. But if we presume he's not going to return, then I think in the portal, Clemson's in the plus in terms of the folks that you brought in. I mean, you've got you lose some guys, and certainly I think probably the biggest one that you lose in the portal that's maybe the most perplexing and most disappointing is RJ Godfrey, who I kind of felt like was kind of poised to be a superstar at Clemson, but he's headed to Georgia, I believe. Jack Clark is leaving as well, Josh Beadle. But when you think of the guys who are coming in for Brad Brownell, Christian Reeves, the center from Duke, a 7-footer, who's growing into his body, he's all of a sudden become a pretty big body. I think he's going to be great. The kid from Boston College, Jaden Zachary, we saw him a couple times this year, a very good player, and Victor Lakem, the forward from Cincinnati. So if you just look at portal pluses and minuses, Clemson's, I think, going to be in the plus in what you gain in the portal from what you lost in the portal. You certainly lose from PJ Hall. If Chase Hunter doesn't return, then I think you lose there. So I think Clemson is a NCAA tournament team heading into next year. I'm not sure if the expectations will be quite as high as what we ran into this year. But again, a lot of this can change before we tip off in October or November.
You're absolutely right, Scott. I mean, based on my experience in Virginia Tech, it can change in 2 weeks.
Yes. a week, 2 days.
It was pretty crazy. There was a transfer. We had a transfer guard in for 2 weeks, and it almost looks like in this new era that he was looking for once he got a Power 5 offer from Virginia Tech, he was looking for a higher paying Power 5 offer in the transfer portal twice. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy.
Well, it's crazy, and I don't like it, but it doesn't matter if I like it or not, because that is the world that we live in. So, but yes, if we can benefit in some way from that, I think in terms of Clemson, then I'll like it a lot more than if you can't benefit from it.
Absolutely, definitely, definitely. Jeff?
All right, thanks, Matthew. All right, Scott. So glad to have you on the show today, and me when we are on our way to Clemson games in the fall, we're always listening to your show. You do a great job, and looking forward to it again this year.
Much appreciated, Jeff. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. What are some of the major strengths coming back this year for Clemson football, Scott?
Well, I think you start with a guy you know at quarterback. I think some of the strength and some of the question mark revolves around the upside of Clemson is whether or not Cade Klubnik is going to take another step forward. I thought we saw a half step forward for him in his first year as a starter. I think there were things down the stretch he did better than he did at the beginning of the year, and certainly he was a very rarely used reserve the previous year with DJ Uiagalelei getting most of the snaps. So, you know, you just can't win in college football at the highest of levels without quarterback play that, you know, puts you in a position to win football games. And Cade certainly had moments of putting Clemson in positions to win football games. And quite frankly, he was a big part of winning some Clemson football games. But when you look at the losses Clemson had, while not, you know, sometimes directly correlated to his play, it was some of the mistakes that he made and some of the things that happened with the ball in his hands, whether it was the scoop and scores at Duke, the scoop and scores at Florida State, you know, those types of things you just can't have from your quarterback. So I think most Clemson people will tell you that the number one focus is, can Cade be the good Cade without the bad Cade? And we'll see. I mean, Trent Pierman had, of course, a very good spring game. I think, you know, some of that gets blown out of proportion a little bit, and whether or not you know, he's a guy that you can rely on. I think you can. I think he's a heck of a football player. But, you know, Cade's obviously the more talented guy. You know, obviously it would behoove Clemson if Cade can have that next step. You know, all right, now you're a second year starter. Can you look like a second year starter? And so we'll see when that comes. I think Clemson offensive line is very good up front. And the depth's a big question, but I think a lot of teams can talk about depth at offensive line, especially in the portal age, where people just aren't going to sit second string. Good players aren't going to remain second string. They're going to go somewhere else and be a first string. So I think Clemson's pretty good up front. You know, Phil Moffitt, Will Shipley going, declaring for the NFL draft, puts a lot of onus on Phil Maffa, who I think's a kind of guy who can be kind of like that Raymond Priester kind of guy where you just lather him up and give him the ball a bunch of times. I think there's question marks behind him. We may talk about that when you ask about what are some of the weaknesses. But offensively, I think this is a team, if the newbies that come in, and I will talk about impact freshmen, in a moment, if the impact freshmen come in and can be better at wide receiver than Clemson has been over the past 2 or 3 years, I think this is an offense that'll be better. I think it's a defense that will be as good, if not better. You certainly lose some really good players on up front. I think you lose a great linebacker as well, but you return great linebackers, and you got a true freshman coming in that I think is going to be really, really good at linebacker position. But Barrett Carter's return, I think, is a huge from a performance standpoint, but I think also from a leadership standpoint, I think that's a huge return for Clemson. So, you know, just with a really broad brush, without getting into the new players and some of the areas where players will step up that we haven't heard from yet, I think this is a better Clemson team in 2024. Top to bottom than 2023. And I think with the expanded playoff, you know, paradigm from which we're about to go into, I think this is a playoff football team. Now, is it a championship football team? I think much is still to be determined about that.
All right. Good stuff, Scott. Yeah, let's talk about those weaknesses you were starting to mention. What are some of the major weaknesses coming back for Clemson? In other words, what do you think the Tigers will be working on in August before the first game? And what are the questions that you think have to be resolved for Clemson to have a successful season?
Well, I think you just don't have championship. You haven't had championship play at wide receiver. And that's been a glaring problem for Clemson. And yes, DJ Uiagalelei and then Kay Klubnik have not helped that problem by making above average or really good wide receivers, great wide receivers, right? I mean, I think, you know, there's plenty of blame. We could spray the blame wherever we want to spray it. But, you know, Antonio Williams had a difficult second year as a sophomore, banged up all the time. Now, Tyler Brown was certainly a guy that emerged due to the vacuum that was created from not really having anybody else that could play the position. And I thought he had a very good year, and I'm excited for him. While undersized, I think he's a guy that can certainly provide that kind of twitchiness that you need when on a third and three or a third and five and where you can throw the football. So I you know, Adam Randall, you know, was banged up again. I mean, it was a second year of being hurt, and then he gets healthy at the end of the year and he actually makes some plays in the bowl game versus Kentucky. I think he has the tools to be a really good wide receiver, but in a moment we're going to talk about the incoming freshman, and I think that's really the key there at wide receiver is, do you have some guys who can step in? I mentioned the depth at the offensive line. I think that's also a concern. Defensively, you know, when I look at this linebacker court, I mentioned Barrett Carter is returning. The defensive line is extremely good. TJ Parker, DeMonte Capehart, Peter Woods, Cade Denhoff. This is an elite defensive line. It's very similar. I think a lot of people talk about Clemson being a wide receiver U. You know, that was kind of the motive under Jeff Scott and so forth. I think Clemson is becoming defensive line U. I think there's a lot of great parts up front for the Tigers. I think the secondary is very good as well. RJ Minkins, Jane Lucas. We saw the emergence of Khalil Barnes, whom I thought had a spectacular season. So I think the area of really kind of keeping an eye on for Clemson is that linebacker position. And are the freshmen, Sammy Brown and Corian Gibson, are they as advertised? And I think we think they are. But, you know, we'll see. And if they are, if Sammy and Corian are what we believe they are, I think Clemson will be very good at linebacker as well. So I think this is a defense that is going to be good. It can be exceptional if Sammy Brown and some depth at linebacker, including Corian Gibson, emerge. And I expect it will. And I think this will be a very good defensive football team.
All right, Scott. Who are some of the new recruits? Or, I mean, I don't know if there's much say on players from the transfer portal, but who are some of the new players on the team that have been impressed you most here in the spring? And are there any that you think will get some major playing time right away for Clemson?
Well, the easiest answer to this is there's no one from the transfer portal, so there's no one really to talk to about that. So that's another whole conversation. I think obviously most folks are focused on Bryant Westcoe and TJ Moore, the wide receivers. I mean, I think we know what Sammy Brown is. I hate to say that for a kid because he seems like such an easy choice as kind of this guy who's going to step right in at the linebacker position and be just spectacular. And he's been there in the spring, and I feel really good about him. And I don't want to take him for granted because at this time last year, he was a junior in high school, getting ready for his junior senior prom. And now we're kind of just assuming he's going to be Jeremiah Trotter, with a little bit more speed and a lot more nastiness, maybe. I don't know if that's fair for him, but that's what we assume, right? So I think probably all eyes, at least from the recruiting ranks, are on those wide receivers and TJ Moore and Bryant Westcoe. And they look the part. They feel the part. They're different. Both of them are different. I think Bryant is going to kind of go into that Z spot for Clemson, where Antonio Williams and Adam Randall have roamed for Clemson. You know, TJ Moore is more of the guy that I think might play the where Tyler Brown has played. So I think you got some depth there. But both of those guys need to be as advertised. You want these 5- and 4-star recruit kids to, you know, a lot of times you think, well, we'll give them a year or two and then we expect greatness out of them. Both of those guys need to be great or very, very good right out of the gate, I think, for Clemson. And you know, I think the tight end position is a weapon for Clemson. You know, Jake Brenningstuhl returning. You have Josh Sapp, as well. But Kristen Bentecour coming in, I think, is a dynamic player. So I think that there are players on the offensive side, multiple players on the offensive side that will make an immediate impact. And then I think you just need to keep an eye on Tammy Brown, who I think is going to make an immediate impact on the defense. So this is a recruiting class, I think, that's going to, if it pans out the way the experts, quote unquote, rank these high school kids as they come into college, if they turn out to be what we think they are, I think they're going to fill some huge holes that Clemson needed filled. And I think that's where I think if you're a Clemson fan, you have some optimism that this is a team that can chase some really, really good play this year and chase the big championship. I think you're definitely in the mix for the ACC championship, but I think you can hope if all those guys pan out, you can chase the big championship, which is, of course, the national championship.
All right. Scott, what do you think are the two most important games for Clemson this upcoming season? And give us your quick thoughts on those two games. And also, what do you think Clemson's overall record will be?
Great question. I think a lot of people are pointing to the Georgia game. I just don't see that as a make or break. Back in the old days, you know, which I'm not that old, but, you know, back in the old days, you lose a game and you might be out of the whole thing. I mean, you know, I mean, that's the way the system was set up. And then when the 14 playoff came, you kind of had the opportunity, I guess, to drop a loss if it wasn't a conference loss, because you could kind of find your way back into you know, the college football playoffs in as a one loss team. Clemson, of course, did that and won a national championship doing that. Of course, Tigers losing to Pittsburgh in the regular season and then going on to defeating Alabama in Tampa. So, but this new world is just a new world. I don't know what else to say about that. I mean, you win your in the ACC, you win your conference championship, you're going to the playoffs, so you're going to get a chance to do that. So I think the Georgia game gets diluted pretty significantly, quite frankly. I mean, I don't know that it really matters. I mean, I say that sounds crazy because you want to beat Georgia and I want to beat Georgia, and we're, you know, Clemson's going to be a, you know, probably 10 to 12 point underdog to Georgia. I think that's probably a safe way to say it. So I don't look at the Georgia game as being pivotal. The ACC also flipping things around to where you don't have Atlantic and Coastal divisions. So I think even within conference, you could lose two games in conference and still get to the ACC championship. So I say all that to say this part of the segment that you got, we've done this, what, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or so. This part of the segment gets more and more difficult to kind of predict because there are mulligans out there, and almost like college basketball now, where you can lose a game or two or three here or there, and it really doesn't matter. That's kind of how college football has gotten. If you're not going to be perfect, you've got to. In other words, you're not going to get an at-large bid, maybe with a perfect record or a one-loss record. If you're in a Power Five, you've got to win your conference. And I think in the Atlantic Coast Conference, you can win your conference, or you can get to the conference championship game with two losses, because I don't see any dominant teams in the ACC next year. So could Clemson lose to Georgia and lose two conference games and be a three-loss team and win the ACC? I could see that. And then you get into the playoffs, well, all you got to do then is just win a couple of games, and you're right back in it. So it's a different kind of thought process that we've got to get our minds around when it comes to college football.
All right, Matthew, I'm going to turn it over to you now for the last couple questions in the podcast.
So, Scott, just let me follow up there. What do you think Clemson's overall record will be in the regular season?
I see Clemson losing to Georgia. I see Clemson losing at least one. If you told me that these freshmen that I just talked about are going to be spectacular, I'd say that may be the only one. So I'd have to go back and look. Let me think through this. Of course, Georgia is the first game on the schedule. And look, Georgia is one of, if not the premier college football team in the country. So I don't think there's any breaking news there where I feel like, you know, losing to Georgia. And I don't know that Clemson's going to lose to Georgia, but I think there's certainly – an argument that you can make that losing to Georgia is, you know, is possible. And I think Clemson will be an underdog in that game. I think if I'm not missing a game or two or three, I think the Tigers get NC State at home, which I think is huge. NC State's kind of that booger for Clemson. It just it's a struggle sometimes, and I give credit to NC State and the Wolfpack for that. I think the trip to Tallahassee is problematic. I don't know what Florida State's going to have. I can tell you that Jordan Travis is a better quarterback than DJ Uiagalelei, and I don't mean that with any disrespect to DJ Uiagalelei. I just think Jordan Travis had a great presence about him, and I don't know what Florida State really has when you break it down. But from a schedule standpoint, outside of Florida State on the road, NC State at home, I think Clemson travels to Blacksburg, but I don't really know exactly what Virginia Tech's going to have. And that's kind of where I get into my whole idea. And I think it's a November game in Blacksburg, which, of course, the weather turns, that always kind of factors, you know, the northern teams, and Virginia Tech's not really northern, but, you know, Blacksburg, they can deal with the cold a little bit better than Clemson. So I would say outside of Georgia, obviously, Florida State, you have NC State at home, and then I would say the Virginia Tech game in Blacksburg. I think a lot of people are very high on Louisville, and I think Louisville is going to be really good, but Clemson hosts Louisville, so I feel better about that. So give me the loss at Florida State, the loss at Georgia in the opening season, and I think you split between Florida State, Louisville, and Virginia Tech. I think you win two of those three. Clemson comes into the ACC championship game with two losses, one conference loss, and we'll see how things play out. And I think it might be Florida State back in there again against Clemson for a round two. If you listen to the media, I think a lot of people think Louisville will be in there as well. We'll find out whether Louisville can sustain what they had down the stretch last year.
Fair enough. So the big global scale question here, Scott, what are the fans, what are your writers, your bloggers, your tweeters, your major fundraisers, school officials, what's everybody thinking right now about Clemson football?
Well, you know, it's all about right now when you're not playing the game, and when it's not spring football, and you don't have anything to talk about in terms of spring football, it's all about the portal. And there's just so much angst about, you know, Coach Sweeney at this point, really not utilizing the portal like a lot of schools are using the portal. And you know, I don't know whether this you know, strategy is going to work long term. I just don't know if the game's going to change so much where you can't sell this anymore. But I do know from personal experiences with players both at Clemson but also players. And I'm going to use a great example here. It's another Atlantic Coast Conference school. It's actually a very successful Atlantic Coast Conference school. I won't mention them by name. It's not Virginia Tech, but I will mention them. I won't mention them by name. Had a wide receiver who I'm great friends with their family, committed to North to play as wide receiver at this school, and ended up not playing at that where they committed to, and ended up signing with a school because they said, we really wanted to build our offense around you. That's probably a very common thing that, you know, you would say to a superstar wide receiver, right? So the wide receiver comes in, he's behind a couple of really good players his freshman year and sophomore year. So he goes into his junior year. The freshman and sophomore year, the guys that were ahead of him have graduated. They're in the NFL. They're having great seasons. He's the guy, right? He is going to be the guy. Guess what they do? Anybody want to guess? They go into the portal, find another wide receiver who takes his place last year. And this family who, you know, believed in this school, believed in this coach, believed in this program, was willing to kind of take the back seat for a year or two because they knew that's what you did back in the day. And the idea was at some point, this is going to be my spot. I'm going to get it. And then you bring in some person from another school, you pay him a little bit of money in NIL or whatever it may be. And now that kid's going to start above our kid who's already got a degree. In fact, going to get a degree here this summer from that institution. I say all that to say Dabo Swinney's MO has been, we're going to recruit out of high school the best players that we can find, and we're going to develop them into great young men, and we're going to graduate them, and we're going to win championships with them. Well, they do all of that, but for the last couple of years, they haven't won championships, but they do all of that. And with previous generations have won championships. And so he's very slow to tell someone, well, you know, I'm going to bring somebody in that didn't believe in us out of high school, who went and played for somebody else in college and wants X amount of dollars in NIL, and we're going to bring them in, and we're going to start them over somebody who has been a part of our program the entire time. He hasn't bought into that. And I love him for that, but I think most Clemson fans want to see, can you win a championship doing that? And we haven't done it. In the era of NIL and portal and all that kind of stuff, Clemson hasn't won a championship. The moment we do, all those questions go away. But until Clemson wins a championship under these new rules, all the questions are about the portal and Dabo and his reluctance to go to it.
Yeah, that's just outstanding analysis, A-plus analysis. We're going to move to the open microphone segment. What do you got for us, Scott?
Well, I'll tell you this. One thing that's a positive out of the portal, and I mentioned this with basketball, but it certainly makes the offseason more fun. I don't know. You know, we used to go through the summer going – You know, all the magazines that came out and all that, you just looked at who was returning from last year to this year. You know, like if Boston College was returning 10 of 11 starters on offense, you felt like, well, heck, they're going to be a pretty good offense next year, right? You know, but you can't do that anymore, right? You got to figure out, well, they're not returning but 5 of 11, but they got 6 guys from the portal, and where do those guys come from and what do they do? So I definitely think all this new era of college football, it has added some spice to the summer. And I will say this, I have tremendous objections to what we're doing with the portal and not so much NIL, but the portal specifically. I absolutely love the fact that this fall, we're going to have college football playoffs on a campus for a home team. I think that's outstanding. That's going to be electric to see playoff football on a college campus. Sign me up for that. I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent take. Excellent take. Jeff, you're up, friend.
All right. Thank you, Matthew. Scott, I'm going to have a question for you in my open mic. But before I get into that, just a quick update here on the college softball tournament, the NCAA tournament. Unfortunately, Clemson was eliminated. Honestly, kind of a disappointing performance down at Alabama. If I'm remembering, I don't think they won a game. So kind of a disappointing tournament for them. Virginia also goes out. Virginia Tech is out. Duke does advance into the super regionals. Right now you have Florida State and Auburn. If Florida State can hold this 10-4 lead with a couple innings to go, they'll advance as well. And this week is also the ACC baseball tournament, which should be just an outstanding tournament. The ACC is probably looking at 8 or 9 teams to reach the NCAA tournament. Just a quick run through. North Carolina is your number one seed. Most likely to get a top 8 national seed. Clemson, virtually a lock to get a top 8 national seed. NC State and Virginia in good positions to regionally host. They have a chance to get into the top 8 with some deep runs. Same with Florida State. They're going to be a regional host with an outside chance themselves to being a top 8 seed. Then you look a little bit further down, Duke and Wake Forest. They probably have to win the ACC tournament to get a regional host, but I think both are in really good position to be 2 seeds. Then you get into the bubble where Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, and Louisville are on the bubble going into the tournament. Pitt, Miami, they have to win the ACC tournament to get into the field. But as you look at the bubble teams, I think Georgia Tech is pretty safe. They have a good offense in the conference as anyone in the ACC. It all depends on their pitching. And down the stretch, they've got series wins over Virginia, Duke, and they were able to get wins against Clemson and Florida State. I think it was really big. They knocked off Florida State in the season finale to finish 500 in the league. And I think you'll see Georgia Tech make the field. I'd be pretty surprised if they don't make it now. Virginia Tech getting swept by Virginia really puts them behind the 8 ball. And they're on the outside looking in. They got to win a couple games, I think, to even get on the bubble. And Louisville, they are smack on the bubble. I think if they go winless, they're getting left out. If they could win that pie they're in with Clemson, they really could enhance their chances. And that's how I think the 3 bubble teams look. So it should be a great ACC baseball tournament. So, Scott, I do want to ask you a question before we let you go. Unfortunately, there's a business side to college athletics that's honestly, I think, you know, it's taken over whenever – you know, we've talked about anything college athletics related for the last several years, whether it's NIL or the transfer portal or conference realignment. And, you know, Clemson is right in the middle of, you know, such a thing themselves with the ongoing lawsuit against the ACC. You know, none of us are lawyers here. I'm certainly can't speak to what, you know, how this will turn out in the court of laws, but my opinion is that this is not going to be a quick resolution, that this is likely to be a multi-year process. I personally do think at some point Clemson is going to end up leaving before the grant of rights comes to an end in 2036. I do not think it will be cheap. I do not expect this grant of rights to be totally invalidated. There could be a settlement number. I think you'll see Clemson in the ACC for a while longer. And I'm thinking in the 3 to 5 year range before it's all completely said and done. And, you know, Clemson's in a new conference. Scott, what is your perspective on this whole ongoing process. You know, Clemson, they just felt like they had to do it. You know, speaking as a Clemson fan, you kind of look at the economics of what's going on between the SEC and Big Ten versus the ACC and Big 12. And, you know, if you want to compete at the high level, highest level, you almost have to do, you had to do something. What's your perspective on the whole process?
Well, a couple things. Number one, I love the Atlantic Coast Conference. I grew up in it. You know, when it expanded, I began to embrace the people who came in or the schools that came in that were not the traditional schools. And if there were no economic disadvantage, I think there's a lot of advantages to the Atlantic Coast Conference and beyond football. In some of the other sports that some of these other conferences don't have or don't play at a high quality. So I think the Atlantic Coast Conference brings a tremendous amount of advantages to remain in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Where this thing has gone sideways, as you noted, is that there is a tremendous financial gap between remaining in the Atlantic Coast Conference when you're a school from whom who could garner interest from whether it's the SEC or the Big Ten or wherever it may be. It hurts me to say what I'm about to say, and that is without the gap, I would be absolutely supportive of Clemson remaining in the Atlantic Coast Conference. In turn, with football, which is where it's all at, and even basketball, although I think the ACC's lost a tremendous amount of stature in terms of basketball, promise or prowess, if you will, in terms of national prowess of that. But if Clemson could remain in the Atlantic Coast Conference and there not be some type of major financial penalty, quote unquote, for that, then I'm all for that because I just think that's where we've been. And I'd like to continue doing that. And I think there's a lot of sports outside of football and basketball that benefit and not only benefit, but thrive from being in the Atlantic Coast Conference. You mentioned baseball, lacrosse, soccer. There's a lot of things that happen in the Atlantic Coast Conference, rowing. And I know people say, well, why does rowing matter? Well, there's a bunch of student athletes that are on scholarship to do rowing. I mean, they're going to better their lives by participating in rowing at Clemson. And it's fun to watch on the lake. So all those things said, that would be the preference, but you can't do that when you're losing money or the disparity of money between the SEC and the Big 12 or the Big 10 is so big. You know, a couple thousand dollars, you know, even a million here or there, you know, you can make that work, right? I mean, we can all make that work, but the gap is astronomical. So the ink, the die is cast, if you will. And the Atlantic Coast Conference is not going to be able to keep Clemson, Florida State, and there may be others, whether that's North Carolina or whomever, I don't know. But they're not going to be able to keep them because they want to compete in football at the highest level. And at football, you can't compete at the highest level when you've got a $10, $15, $20 million gap per year. We're not talking about over 5 years or 10 years or 20 per year. You cannot compete with that. And so both conferences want Clemson. Clemson is going to lead the Atlantic Coast Conference unless something changes. I mean, you know, and maybe it will. But where Clemson goes, I don't know. I have a suspicion it'll be the Southeastern Conference just because they want us. That makes the most sense. But there's also some benefits from going to the Big Ten. So we'll see where it all shakes out. Unfortunately, this turns into a competitive imbalance. And when one conference provides to schools a dramatic amount of financial revenue that another conference can provide that school is unsustainable. And I don't think it's sustainable either to say, well, we're going to pay Clemson, the Atlantic Coast Conference, that is, we're going to pay Clemson more than we pay Wake Forest or Duke or, you know, you name Pittsburgh, whatever. It doesn't matter what school. We're going to give them more to keep them there. That's not fair either, because then that creates another inequity at those schools. So I think Clemson's going to get ratcheted up to the big boy conference. And there's going to be schools in the Atlantic Coast Conference that go down to the, you know, for lack of a better word, the AAA, like of baseball, right? And because the other conferences aren't going to want them, they don't bring enough revenue, they're not, you know, quote unquote, good enough to bring enough revenue. And so they're going to relegate themselves to AAA baseball or AA baseball, depending upon the quality of that program. I don't like any of it. I just don't, but I don't know how you can ignore the fact that that's where it's going. And you mentioned 5 years. I don't, you know, it wouldn't stun me if it goes that long. If you told me I had to bet on it, I wouldn't bet that long. I think it's going to be sooner than that.
All right, Scott. Yeah. Thank you for those, very, very candid comments. Just, modern day and college athletics. Right, Matthew, anything else from your side? We really appreciate you joining.
So, yeah, I don't have anything else. It was excellent analysis on your open microphone question, Scott. I haven't done my open microphone yet. I'm just going to be very quick about this. I'm probably alone by Scott. Do you want, maybe before I make a judgment, I should ask a question. Scott, do you watch ice hockey?
I don't watch it. I've been to a few ice hockey games. So no, okay. So yes and no.
Okay. I wanted to make sure. Cause I figure since I'm a Northerner here and I'm up from the I'm from Fargo, I'm probably the only hardcore. I'm probably the only hardcore ice hockey fan probably on this call, and I think that's a fair assessment to say, probably, right, Jeff? Is that true, Jeff?
Probably. Yeah, you're definitely the resident expert on that, Matthew.
Tomorrow night, if you both have time, catch a period of Vancouver, the Canucks, and the Edmonton Oilers. It's a game 7. It has been the most exciting hockey playoff series here in the entire Stanley Cup. It's, I mean, I think we would all agree, any game 7, whether it's the NBA, the Major League Baseball, or the National Hockey League, any game 7 is epic. But this is Canada's sport, right? And to have two Canadian teams here, like, battle to get to the conference finals before you get to the Stanley Cup, is just going to be an epic matchup. And if you have time to watch even a period tomorrow night, I would encourage you to check it. I would encourage you to check it out. There's some, I guess you could say, there are some newly hockey fans, right, in the I would say in the South. I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes are starting to draw a few more fans. There may be a team that's coming to Atlanta in the future. There are I would say some sorts of signs with arenas being built close to Atlanta, but you never know. But tomorrow night's going to be a heck of a game. So that's all I have for the open microphone. Scott, thank you so much for spending your Sunday evening with us on the All Sports Discussion ACC podcast. We loved having you come on the show.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. I hope you guys have a great time and a great week, great Memorial Day. I'll check in a little hockey for you, just for you, right?
All right. Thank you so much. You guys have a great week. Take care.